So welcome back. I'm now on page 7 of lecture 5, page 7, and I'm going to talk about the Pixel threshold methods, and you should read about it in Stuart Coles' book on page, this is page 74 to 91. And of course you remember what it is, it's how one models the red squares on the my favorite picture plot, the plot on page 2 of lecture 5. And the way to do it, as illustrated in the plot on page 2, is that you start by choosing a high threshold U. This threshold was 1.92 in the plot. And this choice is a difficult and important thing, and it's sort of a work of art. There are not really any completely convincing ways of doing it automatically, although there are papers appearing which give different methods, automatic methods for choosing thresholds. And if you're doing things which are important with Pixel threshold method later on in life, you might want to look at these papers and papers to come which have not already happened. So now you've somehow chosen the threshold U, and then there are N values, capital N values, which are bigger than U. And those capital N values gives you N excesses of the threshold. The excess is the value of the observation minus the threshold. And you also have when the excesses occur, and they occur, say, at the times T1 up to Tn, and you know how many the excesses are, the value of capital N. So your data is capital N excess values, capital N numbers, and then the value of N itself. And the model, the Pixel threshold model, says the following. You assume that the excesses are IID and have a generalized Pareto distribution, and T1 up to Tn are occurrence times of an independent Poisson process. That means independent means that the Poisson process is independent of the sizes of the excesses. So when the excesses happen, doesn't affect the, or how many of them happens, don't affect the distribution of the excesses. And we don't, right, at least in this course, we don't really use the T1s up to Tn's. We just use a capital N, and that this has a Poisson distribution. So now we have the model, and can go to the second bullet point, which is just you use the observed excesses to estimate the parameters of the generalized Pareto distribution, typically using maximum likelihood, and you use the N to estimate the mean of the Poisson distribution. Then you have when you've done this, you have all the parameters of your model, and have the distribution of excesses. And in particular, what one often wants to use, and you have already worked a bit with, presumably in technical project one, is that you want to estimate the value at risk, which is, or expected shortfall, which are things which depend on the tail of the distribution of the excesses. So what one is interested is in the distribution of excesses, and or equivalently the tail, the distribution, that is f bar of x, which is by definition equals 1 minus f of x. This is what you're interested in. And of course, if you estimate f bar or f, doesn't matter, they are the same. I mean, you get one from the other directly. And then you use the formula for conditional probabilities to realize that f bar of x equals f bar of u times f u bar of x minus u, where f bar u of x minus u is a conditional distribution of threshold excesses. And this formula you should understand, so if you haven't derived it, you should do it now or do it again. And it should only take 5 minutes, but it's an important formula. It's very likely things like that will appear in the home exam. And regardless, when you do a course, you do it sort of, one aim is to pass the exam and get a good grade. But the real purpose of going to a course is that you learn important things, things you can use later in life. And this computation is a useful thing. Now, if you want to estimate the tail distribution, if you want to get an estimate f bar hat of x, then you, the way to do this is to estimate the two components in f bar x. You estimate f bar u and you estimate f bar u x minus u. And f bar u, the simple and useful estimate of that is capital N or little n. F bar u is a probability of exceeding u. And then, of course, this completely obvious estimate is you take the number of times you've seen an exceedance of u, and then you divide it by the number of observations. So the observation, or the n, capital N or little n in the bottom formula, is pretty obvious. Then the f bar hat x minus u, it's nothing new in this. You just said that you somehow have to estimate this last factor too. So moving from page 7 to page 8, so page 8 of lecture 5, then, well, when we estimated in the previous slide, we estimated f bar of u by capital N of over little n. Then if you want to estimate f bar of x, say some x which is bigger than u, why don't you just estimate it by n of x, where n of x is the number of excesses of the level x. Well, again, why don't you estimate f bar of x by the number of excesses over x divided by n? And the reason, which you've seen now quite a lot, I would think, in your work with technical project 1, is that if x is a very high level, then n of x is small or zero, and then this estimator is useful. It works for u, because u is quite typically quite a bit smaller than the x, but it doesn't work for x. And so one has to do something. One has to extrapolate from somewhat smaller values to the really extreme values. And one should remember that it is these very large x's, that's what we're interested in. And now, what we've done throughout is that we assume that f bar u of x is a generalized Pareto distribution. These are typically denoted h of x in the course. So we assume that f bar u of x equals h of x, and then we have, which is a generalized Pareto distribution, and then we have estimated, as on the previous slides, the parameters of h of x and can use them. And then we get the estimate of the tail of the distribution f. We get f bar hat of x equals capital N over little n. And then you plug in the estimate of the tail of the generalized Pareto distribution. So you plug in h bar hat of x minus u, because for the value to be bigger than x, it means that the excess has to be bigger than x minus u. And of course, this equals n over n, and then we have the formula for the tail of the generalized Pareto distribution with the parameters estimated parameters inserted. So we estimate the tail of the distribution F by capital N over little n parenthesis 1 plus gamma hat over sigma hat x minus u to the power minus 1 over gamma hat. So now we have the tail, and then we have the distribution function too, because f, an estimate of f of x is just 1 minus f bar hat of x. And to get the pth quantile, say an estimate of the pth quantile, the p value at risk for the distribution f, then you just solve the equation f hat of x, which is xp, which is equal to 1 minus f bar hat of xp equals x. Then we have this equation and we solve it for x. And the solution is the bottom formula. So it's xp plus u over sigma bar over gamma bar, and then n over little n over capital N 1 minus p to the minus gamma hat minus 1. And this holds for, you should remember, sort of the x's have to be bigger than the u's for all this to make sense. And this in turn means that p has to be bigger than n, capital N over little n. Otherwise, things don't make sense. And again, this is a formula you should derive yourself and check yourself. And in earlier versions of my lectures, they have looked a little bit different. I've not tried, after your questions, I've tried to streamline a little bit and hope that I succeeded with that. And as usual, if you discover errors or see things which could be done better, please tell me. So moving from page 8 to page 9, something you do in the technical project 1, and something I think is pretty important for understanding the models, but maybe in the end less important for financial risk handling, is that you can get the distribution of block maxima from the peaks over threshold model and vice versa, if you believe that the models fit reasonably well. And so here we go only one way, and in page 9, we see, I'm writing down how you can get the distribution of block maxima from knowing the peaks over thresholds models. So the peaks over threshold model in the first bullet point says that suppose the values larger than u occur as a Poisson process with intensity lambda, and that this process is independent of the sizes of the excesses. Bullet point 2, suppose excesses are IID and have a generalized Pareto distribution, so that h of x equals 1 minus, and then you have this expression with the scale factor sigma and the shape, scale parameter sigma and the shape parameter gamma. And that these two bullet points means that you assume the peaks over threshold model holds. Then if you're interested in the maximum of t observations, so say maximum of the whatever 24 trading days in a month, then we're interested in notation in the third bullet point. We're interested in sub capital T, the largest observation in time interval 0 T. Then we've derived a formula in I think it was lecture 2, which says that the probability of MT equals e to the minus, and then a long expression involving lambda, which is the intensity of the Poisson process, and the parameters gamma and sigma. And you can see the form of this expression is just the same as in a generalized extreme value distribution. That's a side remark, but you can also see now if we know the generalized the peak zero threshold model, so we know lambda, sigma, and gamma, then we also know the distribution of the maximum of T observations. And of course, in reality, we don't know the lambda, sigma, and gamma, but we have estimates of them. And then we get an estimate of the distribution of the maximum, say the monthly maximum, by plugging the estimated parameter into the expression on the bottom of page 9. Okay, and very important thing is, both for the block maxima method and for the peak zero threshold method, we need to estimate the parameters of the model. They are not given sort of from the beginning. We need to estimate them. And then in this course, we use maximum likelihood estimate inference, and this is described in Stuart Coles' book on page 30 to 34. And it's fantastically useful and flexible, and it's important very much beyond what's taught in this course, both for extreme values and in statistics in general. So what you learn when you learn about maximum likelihood inference, that's something which is extremely useful inside of the course and outside of the course. And you remember, what does one do in maximum likelihood inference? Well, first one uses the model one has to compute the likelihood function, which is a function where you insert the observations. So those are numbers, those are not variables, but you have the parameters, and they are variables. And then you maximize the likelihood function over the parameters to get the maximum likelihood estimates. So for example, for the block maxima method, then you have your distribution function, the generalized extreme value distribution function. It's a function of the three parameters, mu, sigma, and gamma, and the likelihood function is the product of the densities of the generalized extreme value distribution with the observations plugged in, and then with mu, sigma, and gamma as parameters. And the maximum likelihood estimates are just what you get from the values which maximize this function. The maximum likelihood estimates are the values which makes the observations as likely as possible. This is sort of a little bit of hard sell, but it's a good way of thinking of it still. And you should remember the ifs. It's not sure that there is a maximum. It's there could be several local maxima. And typically, maximization cannot be done in formulas, but one has to do it by numerical methods. Nowadays, of course, numerical methods are easy. You have them on in your computer. And the problems typically go away if you have a reasonable number of observations. So typically, if you have 20 or 30 observations, then there are not multiple maxima, and the maxima do exist. Okay, then you're not necessarily interested in the parameters themselves, but in functions of the parameters. In this course, very typically one is interested in the value at risk, and this is the quantile of the distribution of the values. And this quantile, you can derive a formula of it, and it becomes a formula which involves the various parameters. And now you can estimate this function, say the value at risk, by just taking the estimated parameters and put them into the formula. So functions of parameters are estimated by plugging estimated parameters into the function. Then one wants to know not just the estimates, but also the uncertainty of the estimates. And one way of doing this is to do confidence intervals. And the simplest confidence intervals for parameters are obtained from the inverse of the observed information matrix. And confidence intervals for functions of parameters, like the value at risk, which I talked about, or the expected shortfall, are obtained using the delta method. This method built on one-step Taylor series expansion of the function. Then the delta confidence intervals are not always all that accurate, and maybe sometimes profile likelihood confidence intervals can be more accurate, and typically programs gives you those too. And then you might want to check, that's a final bullet point on page 10, you might want to check if you can make simplifications of the model. Say if one can use the same value of gamma for two series of returns, or if one could assume that gamma equals zero, or other things, maybe sigma for two different series of returns, or several different series of returns could be similar, the same. This is probably not so likely, but you can do that by hypothesis testing. And if you do maximum likelihood, this is completely automatic. You just use likelihood ratio test to test if these model simplifications are okay. So next step, and an important step, is dependence. This is in Cole's book on page 92-104. It's a question of how does one handle dependence. Typically, there is at least short-range dependence in financial time series, say in time series of returns. So if you have sort of wild behavior right today, a big value today, then it's fairly likely you will have one tomorrow. But this may be, the influence of that maybe doesn't last so long, or typically, sometimes it can last fairly long. So the new challenge which typically come with when you look at dependence, when the series of there are dependence between the observations, that is that extremes come in small clusters. And how do you do then? Well, an important parameter which you've presumably already worked with in Technical Project 1 is the extremal index. It's here denoted theta, and it's 1 over the mean cluster length. And next slide, slide 12, I'll talk more about what that means. And the important thing is that mathematical theory says that in fairly general circumstances, clearly not at all always, the probability that Mn is less than or equal to x, that the maximum of n observations is less than or equal to x, the distribution functions of n, of the maximum of n observations, that typically has the form f of x to the power theta n, where Mn, here F is a distribution function of one variable. And you remember the simplest formula. If you have IID observations, then the distribution function of the maximum is just F of X to the nth, to the power n. Now instead, when there's dependence, you get the power theta n, and theta here is 1 over the mean cluster length, and this, the mean cluster length is at least 1, so theta is less than 1. It can be 1, but it cannot be bigger than 1. So dependence sort of makes the effective sample size smaller. It works just like if you have theta n observations instead of theta observations. And then typically, but not always, the clusters are approximately IID. The distribution of two different clusters are the same, so that each cluster contains a few observations, and how they vary stochastically is the same for the different clusters. So there's dependence, and these clusters are typically independent, they have the same distribution, but there are dependence of the values within the clusters. And then the next bullet point on page 11 is that fairly typically, or typically, the tail of the cluster maxima is approximately the same as the tail of f of x, which is somehow strange but true. And typically, the generalized extreme value distributions are the only possible limit distributions, just as for the independent case when the observations were independent. And finally, all this assumes that the time series is stationary, so somehow that the distribution of returns 2 years back, the stochastic variability of returns 2 years back is the same as it is this year. And that has to be, you have to consider that and perhaps check that when you use these things in practice. So I'll stop this sound clip here on page 11 of lecture 2.